Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Well, do you know the people who want to serve as the next governor of Texas? Primary elections are slated for next March, and between now and then, we hope to have each of the major candidates, Democratic and Republican, on Think. First to take us up on the invitation is Fort Worth native Tom Schieffer. He began his political career in the Texas legislature, then worked as an attorney and in business, including nearly a decade as an investor in and then president of the Texas Rangers baseball team. Schieffer worked closely in those years with George W. Bush, who as president appointed him to serve as U.S. ambassador to Australia and then to Japan. After returning to Texas in January, Tom Schieffer in June officially launched his candidacy for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. His declared opponents in the primary are humorist Kinky Friedman and rancher Hank Gilbert. We will be taking your questions for Tom Schieffer throughout the entire hour today, so feel free to call us anytime at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Tom, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.
Are there specific issues in terms of the direction that Texas is headed right now that caused you to decide that you wanted to throw that into the ring?
I think education was the thing that really brought me to the fight. When you are in Asia, as I have been recently, and you see up close what's happening there, you realize that Texas is on the verge of not being competitive with the rest of the world. And I think we have to have an educational system that is better than the one that we have now, and they produce better results than we're getting right now.
You've said that what we lack as much as money is vision. What kind of vision do you have for education in Texas?
I think you have to look at education with a new paradigm. We used to be an agricultural state, and we talked about education from the terms of when the crops would be harvested and then planted. We can't do that anymore. We have to think about education as the knowledge industry that produces jobs all over the world and that makes us competitive all over the world. That means we have to start educating our children earlier than we're doing now. I think we need to get some sort of learning environment when they're 3-4 years old. We have to have an educational system that they can plug back into no matter what their age is. We can't think that we're through educating them when they're 17 or 18 or even 21 or 22. We have to have a system that keeps their skills at the best levels for the entire lives, because the technology cycle is so rapid today that technology is obsoleting jobs and at the same time creating opportunities, and we've got to be sure that we're a part of those new opportunities. Otherwise, I think Texas could wind up being a third world state.
Can we afford universal pre-kindergarten?
You have to be able to afford education. Education is an investment. And too long we have looked here in Texas as if it is some sort of burden. It's not. It's a blessing. My family is a product of having an educational system that educates every child. My brother, Bob Schieffer, who's seen by many people across the country, was the first on either side of our family to go to college. My sister was the second, and I was the third. When we crossed that threshold, it changed our lives, and we've all been pretty successful since then. But it was because we could get a good public education and compete with any child in Texas at that point in time. And I worry that that's not the case anymore.
One of the other things you have stressed is important is making sure that we keep things like art and music education in the schools. There are people who will argue those are nice, but that we can't afford the time and money required when our kids are still failing the sort of three R's components of education.
It's all of the above. You can't say that we're going to cut out art and music and hope to educate a child. We've got to make the educational system fit the child, not the child fit the educational system. A child wants to go to school. And when a child wants to go to school, that is the best educational tool you have. And if they want to go to school because of art, if they want to go to school because of music, if they want to go to school because of science, it doesn't matter to me, but the fact that they want to go to school makes the difference. When they don't want to school, that's when they drop. When they don't want to go to school, that's when they drop out. When they don't think school is right for them, they feel alienated from the rest of their peers, and they wind up dropping out of school. When we have dropout rate 40, 50, 60%, as we do in some neighborhoods in this state, getting ready to have a generation of tax consumers, not taxpayers. And I think that's why things like art and music are so important to the curriculum every school.
You mentioned earlier the fact that the school calendar is still set up to accommodate the cultural schedules. Do we need to look at year-round school for every child?
I think we do. Before we get to year-round school, I think we can make the school year that we have now. But I think we have to talk about and think about our educational needs are for the future. And I'm not talking about next year. I'm talking about 20, 30 years down the road. But that's what vision is, and that's what leadership can do, is to create a culture in which we look at education differently than we have in the past, that we look at it because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's the strategic thing to do. And that's where I think we have fallen down in the recent past.
Let's talk about university-level education. First of all, how optimistic are you about the passage of Proposition 4 this week that would create 7 more research institutions in the state of Texas?
You never know what the prospects of a constitutional election are, because the numbers are usually small. But I'm very much in favor of Proposition 4 because I think we need more so-called Tier 1 universities in Texas. The Tier 1 universities are the universities that attract and do the major research in this country. Texas now has 3, and really it's probably about 2.5, the University of Texas, Texas A&M, and Rice. California has 9, New York has 7. What we're trying to do, and I think it was a very good proposition then put before people, is to create more of those Tier 1 universities, University of Texas, University of Texas at Dallas, University of Texas at Arlington. Those are all institutions that are being talked about, Texas Tech. An amount of money is to be set aside that hopefully would be matched to, by private gifts and what, that would allow more research to be done at those universities and allow to attain that Tier 1 status.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to us today at think@kera.org. We're speaking this hour to Democratic candidate for governor in 2010, Tom Schieffer. He's former U.S. ambassador to Australia and to Japan. Let's talk for a minute about safeguarding and developing natural resources in Texas. What concerns you most about the way that we are managing what we have here?
By any measure, the quality of our environment has deteriorated. We're number one in the release of toxic chemicals into the water supply. We're one in the release of particulates into the atmosphere, into the air. We're doing a very poor job of protecting the air and water and natural resources of Texas, and we can do a whole lot better. I think, again, that is a situation in which you have to have someone at the top who cares. I think Governor Perry is indifferent to what happens environmentally in Texas. What you also have to realize is that the environment is one side of the same coin where energy is located. We have to have an energy policy that takes into account the environment and an environmental policy that takes into account energy. That's not easy. We have to develop alternative renewable energy resources because fossil fuels simply are going to be exhausted and are going to have to be replaced. But we can do that. And again, back, excuse me, to that Tier 1 university status, you can do that when you have the research and development that will give you the new technology that supports both environmental and energy answers to the problems that we face.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest this hour is Tom Schieffer, who is running as a Democrat for the primary for the gubernatorial elections that will take in 2010. Let's go next to, let's go first, rather, to Phil Inles. Hello, Phil.
Hello.
Hi, Phil. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Schieffer, a couple of things. My wife is an educator, and she has been informed by an agency that Governor Perry is trying to take over TRS, the teacher retirement system, and has placed some of his people in strategic positions. And number two, why do we continue to underpay our educators? You just said yourself, Our children, our education is investment. We're not investing what we should be investing. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
It's very disturbing to me to Governor Perry is talking about on the teacher retirement system about putting in a different set of people that would make different kind of investments for the teacher retirement system. I think the worst thing that we could do is politicize the investment policy, policies of the teacher retirement system. And I'm very concerned that with this move to change personnel out, that might be what we're aiming for. The teachers into the retirement system wanting to have a secure investment that they can draw down in the future, and we don't need to risk their future with the kind of investments that some of Governor Perry's friends have made over the years. With regard to the teacher pay levels, I think you have to pay teachers more. I really do. We have lived for many years off the fact that so many of our teachers in early years were women, and other professions weren't open to women. In effect, they became teachers at lower pay rates than they might otherwise have been. They've been lawyers and doctors and things like that. That's all changed. Professions are old women, as they well should be. But that means that you're going to have to pay teachers more to attract the best and the brightest to the profession. You also, I think, have to restore the respect that people have for teaching. It is honorable work, and it is work that needs to be done. My brother and I have had success in life, and we've been mentioned in the newspaper, on television, and whatnot. But we always say that the person that made the most difference in the most lives in our family was our sister, because she was a teacher. And she changed lives, whether she was teaching in a low-income school for 17 years or whether she was a principal, because that teacher can make that difference. And we have to recognize that, and we have to pay accordingly.
Given that the bulk of property taxes for residents already goes to paying for education, we have to assume that paying teachers considerably more, or a reasonable amount more, means that we will be paying more property taxes?
I think property taxes are the one part of the tax equation that has pretty well been exhausted. I think we've among the highest ad valorem taxes in Texas. So if we're going to pay more, it's going to require more revenue, I think it will have to come somewhere besides ad valorem taxes. But having said all of that, I think we have to look at the whole range of where we're spending money in Texas, how we're matching in Texas, and look first at, are we getting our money's worth? I would offer that in things like children's health insurance, we're not. We have a system where we could down almost $1 billion more in federal funds. We don't do that because we won't match. Won't put up the money that is required to get that money. For every dollar that we put up, we'd get $2.57 back. The only reason I think we don't do that is because somebody wants to argue that they're more conservative than somebody else is in a Republican primary. But because we don't do that, what happens is children are not covered. When they're not covered and they have things like asthma and diabetes, they wind up getting sick. And when they get sick, they go to county hospital emergency rooms. And when they do that, the hospital is giving them the most expensive care that the hospital has to offer. So what you wind up with is a system cost more than it should and covers fewer than it should. That's poor management. That's not getting your dollars worth out of your taxpayer dollars, and people at the local level are having to cover cost. I think when you look at all of it, you have to do a much better management job than we're doing today.
Democratic gubernatorial primary candidate Tom Schieffer is my guest. We'll resume our conversation with him in a moment. You're welcome to join us now by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can make your passion your career. Evening classes are now available in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Tom Schieffer is my guest this hour. He is running for governor as a Democrat in the primary. We hope to have all of the candidates from the parties who are polling at a certain level. So throughout the next several months, hear from all of them. But Mr. Schieffer is the first one to take us up on our offer for an interview. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next to Stephenville, where we're Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hey, this is Joe. Joe, yeah.
Hi, go ahead.
My question for Schieffer is, What are they going to? What are you going to do to reduce classroom size to what it should be? Because a lot of the money seems to be in administrators, and the administrators have a way of speaking up for themselves. Teachers do not. And my wife was recently teaching 2 years ago, but when she gave up because it was just impossible to deal high school science and take six classes and have 30 in the classroom per class. It just, it's impossible. Some of the things that the administrators think is possible doesn't give the education the students need. And it should be classroom size, like for a science room, should be like 18 to 22 and not 24, 30. And we know that that works in some of the the early grades, but not in the high school level.
Thanks for your call.
I think you're on something there. I think class size is a huge problem in education, and every study that I have seen, particularly in the younger children, shows that the smaller the class, the better chance of success they have. But it's just one of many things that has to be addressed. I've done a lot of different things in my life. I've been in the legislature. I've been a lawyer. I still am a lawyer. I've been involved with the baseball team. I've been an ambassador. I was in charge of building the ballpark in Arlington. They were all that I hadn't done before. And I found a little formula that worked pretty well, and that was to put everybody at the table and ask them how to do it and try to get the smartest people that you can. And that's what I'd want to do as governor. And I think when we look at education, what we have to say is, look, we need to have parents, we need to have educators, we need to have people in the business community. We need to get them at the table and, folks, this is not working for anybody. What are we going to do to solve it? And I think it's not an ideological problem, it's a practical problem. And we've spent too much time on ideology, we've spent too much time on finger-pointing, and not enough time listening to each other and trying to come up with a consensus on what needs to be done. And I think class sizes are certainly part of the problem that has to be addressed.
I have an email here from Peter in Benbrook who asks, how do you view the militarization of our border with Mexico? And what role as governor would you play in securing the border in a more humane way?
You have to secure a border. I think that the fence that is being built along the border is a disaster. I don't think it will stop illegal immigration. And I think we have to recognize that there are a lot of people in this country that are doing work that we want done. I think they ought to be given a green card and pay for that green card. I think they ought to be put on the tax rolls and start paying taxes so that they pay for the services that they're receiving. We also have to recognize, however, that if we're going to solve the pressure for illegal immigration, we're going to have to partner with Mexico. And we have to care about what happens on the south side of the border, not just the north side of the border. Because if we don't have a Mexico that is growing and is creating jobs down there, we're going to continue to have this pressure to cross that border. And that's not good for anybody. So I think that one of the big things that we can do is to stop demonizing Mexico and Mexicans as the cause of every problem we have in this country and start trying to work toward a solution that will be beneficial to both sides of the border.
What power would you have as governor to affect the Mexican economy and how successfully it's working?
I think it's the power of the bully pulpit, but it's also the power of working with the Mexican governors on the other side of the border and sharing intelligence with the federal government of the United States and the Mexican government. We have to work together, and we have to work as a team, and we have to put all the resources that we can into that spirit of cooperation if we're going to have any success.
How concerned are you that extraordinary level of drug violence we're seeing in Mexico right now will ultimately, although it seems not done so far, will ultimately spill over onto this side of the border?
It's having an effect on that side of the border because people are reluctant to go into Mexico and in areas like tourism and things like that where people used to really get a lot of benefit out of being so close to Mexico. They're not getting that today. But again, you have to cooperate with the Mexican government to try to an end to this violence. I was both ambassador to Australia and ambassador to Japan, and we had representatives of the DEA and the FBI at POST. I instituted programs that brought them together in the mornings to have meetings so that they could share intelligence and whatnot. I think that's what you have to do on a state level as well, is try to get, again, everybody to the table, talk about how we approach it together. Too often, agencies are more conscious of turf battles than they are of the objective that they're trying to achieve. And I think when the state government is a cooperative member of a team, it can make a difference.
Living overseas for the better part of the decade, what resources did you look to keep up with what was taking place day to day?
Of course, the internet keeps you abreast of what's going on. But I was here so often, in many ways, I felt like I hadn't left. I was in the United States usually once a month, once every 6 weeks. And believe me, the crossing that Pacific often, you know how far away it is. But we live in a world in which communication is so instantaneous and so interconnected that you never feel like you're too far away.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Damien in Dallas. Hi, Damien.
Hi. How are you, Chris?
Great. Thank you.
Great. Well, I just wanted to ask a question of your guest. You know, states seem to be going in a direction, or many states, or several states, seem to be going in a direction of allowing gay marriage and being supportive of it. And as your guest may very well be aware, several years ago, Texas passed Prop 2, which banned gay marriage, and actually many contracts that looked anything like it between people of the same gender. You know, I'm wondering, you know, depending on who you're talking to, Texas is becoming more of what you might call a purple state. And I'm wondering what your guest position on gay marriage in Texas might be, and you know, if efforts are undertaken to try to overturn Prop 2, and that was ever, you know, ever did pass through the House and through you know, through our Texas government and landed on his, would he be supportive of something like that? But also more, would he be apt to reject additional, if any additional, so-called anti-gay legislation was presented to him? Would he be supportive of that as well?
Thanks for your call.
Uh-huh.
I believe that, much like President Obama has said, that a marriage between a man and a woman. But I also believe that people should not be discriminated against because of their sexual orientation. I think we have to recognize that we're people. And that they shouldn't be harmed because of something that they didn't have anything to do with.
So does that mean there needs to be some sort of designation other than marriage that formally recognizes a partnership between two people of the same gender?
I think people ought to be able to get benefits. They ought to be able to enjoy the same status. They should not be discriminated against because they're gay. I would support that kind of legislation.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Curtis in Dallas. Hi, Curtis.
Hi. Of all the billions of dollars that the lottery has generated for the state of Texas, where is all that money going to when it was supposed to and was originally designated to go to public education? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Carl.
I think much of it goes to public education. I'm not sure that was ever really the that people talked about, that it was going to go to education, but I'm not sure that the law actually described that it should. But I think the law has been changed since the passage of it. But the lottery itself is not producing today what it used to do because I think the numbers have diminished somewhat. But education is still, I think, the number one priority of Texas, and we have to have a good educational system that is well-funded, and we have to do the best we can to see it's done.
I want to talk for a minute about your relationship with former President Bush. Mm-hmm. You've been close friends for years. You've worked together. You have always voted as a Democrat, but there are people who say anybody who accepted those appointments from a dyed-in-the-wool Republican president somehow lack the credibility required for someone to run for the Democratic primary.
I hope that's not the case. I've always been a Democrat. I've never voted in a Republican primary. I've never missed voting Democratic primary since I was old enough to vote in 1968. When the president asked me to go to Australia, I told him that I would be honored to serve the country, but I did not want to become a Republican. And he said, I'm not asking you to serve the Republican Party. I'm asking you to serve the country. And I did. And I did it, I think, with some distinction and with some honor. The very first question that you have when you fill out your begin the process of becoming ambassador, the first question that's asked is party affiliation. And in April of 2009, I put down that I was a Democrat. I didn't put down I was an independent. I didn't put down I was a Republican. That was just the terms of the deal. And I, as I said, I served the country and well. And I'd like for people also to think about other Democrats who have served in Republican administrations. Daniel Patrick Moynihan comes immediately to mind. He served in the Nixon White House. He went on to be a monumental Democratic senator from New York who did some wonderful things. And I think it would have been unfortunate if the people of New York had said because he had served in a Republican administration that somehow that disqualified him from being a Democrat. And I don't think people really take that attitude. I think they sometimes ask the question. I'm happy to answer it. And but I think they recognize that service is supposed to be done for the good of the country and not the party.
You've gone on record to say that you voted for Mr. Bush as president and also winning for governor. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Bushes will vote for you if you win the primary?
I think I'm going to let you ask them that. But, I just think I'll answer for myself and let others answer for themselves.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Jeff in Dallas. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Thank you.
I'm looking, Mr. Schieffer, at your website and at news reports and so on, and the only thing I can find that you had about health care, and this is from your website, better management will bring us better health care. And then you talk about the number of uninsured children in Texas, but there are many uninsured adults in Texas as well. So I'd like to have a detailed description of what you think should be done about health care. Hank Gilbert does have a detailed description of his plan for health care on his website, and I can't find anything about you except that you've compared it to car insurance and say that we should have an assigned risk pool, and that would mean that for people that have health problems, their insurance would simply be unaffordable, even if they were mandated to carry it.
Thanks for your call.
I think you got to have access to health insurance. I think it's got to be at an affordable price. I think that's the crux of health insurance reform. We have more uninsured adults in Texas than any other state. We have more uninsured children than any other state. We need health care reform, and we need that access. What I have talked about is whether or not it is a public option, I think, is not necessarily the main issue. I think it's access. I think if you had a public option, that would be fine. But if you didn't have a public option, you still need that access. And the comparison they've made on automobile insurance is that when we mandated automobile insurance in Texas several years ago, at the time there were several hundred thousand people that were not covered. We had what we called an assigned risk pool, and that you basically made all the insurers who were writing insurance cover that percentage of uninsured by the same percentage of the market. I think you could do something like that with health insurance. But the key here is that people need health insurance, and they need it despite whatever pre-existing conditions they might have. What we have right now is a system that is unsustainable because fewer and fewer people are being covered, more and more people are being denied coverage at any cost, and I think that that is just wrong. I think we have to have a health insurance bill that gives people the peace of mind that they're going to be covered. And I think that we can, if they need help with that, we can help subsidize that. But the key here is to get a bill passed that will allow people to have health insurance. And I'm hopeful that that's about to happen. Let me say one other thing. I'm old enough to remember the debate that occurred around Medicare. And it was exactly the same debate that you hear today. Somehow we're going to have socialized medicine, that you're not going to be able to see your doctor anymore, the health system's going to collapse. Well, it didn't happen. And there's not a Republican or Democrat in the Congress today that would stand up and say, I think Medicare ought to be repealed. We can do this with health insurance, but we need to pass a bill. And will it be perfect? No, it won't. Will the calls for reform be immediate? Probably. But we'll be so much further down the road than we are today and giving people the kind of health care that they need.
My guest this hour is Tom Schieffer. He is former U.S. ambassador to Australia and to Japan. He is running as a Democrat in the gubernatorial primary for the 2010 elections. You can join the conversation by sending an email to think@kera.org or by calling us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can make your passion your career. Evening classes are now available in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/mls.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is 2010 Democratic gubernatorial candidate Tom Schieffer. He is former U.S. ambassador to Australia and Japan, and you may join our conversation right now by calling us at 1-800-933-5372. Let's go next on the line to Brett in Louisville. Brett.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Great. Thank you.
Good. I was just wondering if you're going to be able to, in particular, tie Rick Perry down to a public debate on television or on radio, because I would really love to see it with him. He seems very good at avoiding them. I'll take your comments off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Brett, I think it's going to be up to you more than it is to me. I think the public will demand that there be a debate, and I'm sure that there will be at some point in time. It's just a part of running for governor nowadays, but I look to that because I think having a chance to get somebody one-on-one would produce a lot of good results.
If you were able to win the Democratic nomination, do you have a preferred opponent on the Republican side?
No, I think that's for the Republicans to decide who they want to nominate, but I'm prepared to run against either Senator Hutchison or Governor Perry. Because I think overall the philosophy that they've been espousing is one that is failing Texas.
You and Senator Hutchison actually started in the same class,
we
right,
did.
In the Texas legislature.
We've known each other forever.
1972. Talk about how Texas politics has changed since then.
We came in after the Sharpstown scandal, and there were 77 of the 150 members of the House that year were freshmen members.
Which is unprecedented.
It never happened before, or I guess the first first legislature, but after that it never happened again. And we were all pretty young, or a lot of us were very young, and we've stayed friends and acquaintances through the years, and a lot of things have happened. Kay, of course, went to the Senate, but I think that there will be five of us now that have run for governor. Nobody's gotten elected governor out of that, but we've had attorney generals, we've had speakers, we've had railroad commissioners, we've had seven or eight congressmen. Eddie Bernice Johnson was in that class as well. Mickey Leland and Craig Washington and lots of folks that have had a big impact on politics were all in that class. And it's been interesting to follow each other since then. And Kay and I are friends. We've been friends the whole time. Our politics are just different.
Was it easier to work across the aisle then than it is now?
It was. I think it was a lot easier. And it truly was a more nonpartisan atmosphere then. Now, most of us were Democrats, and I think that might have helped the situation. But something happened a few years ago. For a long time in Texas, we had a tradition of nonpartisanship in the legislature. You had Democrats elected lieutenant governor and speaker, appointed Republicans as committee chairs. The Republicans have since appointed some Democrats, but it's lost the nonpartisanship that it had. And in many ways, I think a lot of us over the years had hoped that what we had in Texas would go to Washington, and what has happened is Washington has come to Texas. We got to put an end to that. It's very destructive to our state to have the level of partisanship that we have now. I love this program because it's called Think. I think that's what we need in the legislature, is to do more thinking and less criticizing each other on a partisan basis.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can send email to think@kera.org. We have an email that says, Texas is famously hard on crime, yet has high rates of incarceration and exonerations, to say nothing about what we spend on capital cases. What are your positions on crime punishment?
I think with the Willingham case that you've seen here lately, you have to recognize that something's wrong, and that we need to ensure that innocent people are the only ones that are either incarcerated or executed. The process broke down in Mr. Willingham's case. He may very well have been guilty, but he certainly deserved to have the information that was presented to him to be considered by the governor. You've seen over and over with the Innocence Project people that have been incarcerated for a long period of time. Saturday night, I'm going to an event for Joyce Ann Brown, a woman who was wrongly accused and served many years in the penitentiary and was proven to be innocent. We have to have a process here in which we can examine DNA and every other piece of evidentiary. A piece of evidence that can exonerate or convict the guilty. And I think we can do a better job on that. And I would hope that we could pass some legislation in the next session that would help that process along.
So many other U.S. states operate their justice systems without capital punishment. Why does Texas require the ability to execute its worst offenders?
I believe in the death penalty. I think it does serve as a deterrent. I was actually in the legislature when it was first passed, and I have to tell you that it gave me some pause just as a matter of conscience. But I voted for it, and because I think there are a group of people that are deterred by it. John Hill was the attorney general at that point in time, and he told me something that stuck in my mind. He said, if you make the penalty for aggravated armed robbery life in prison and murder life in prison, that the person standing there will take that into account and will blow away the person standing behind the counter at the convenience store, because that's the person that's most likely to be able to convict him. When I got out of law school, after I'd left the legislature and I started practicing law, I actually had I took criminal appointments. And I had a young man who had been arrested and accused of committing 280 burglaries, home burglaries. He had been to the penitentiary a couple of times before, so this was the third time that he was arrested, and that made him, the third felony would make him a habitual criminal, which would be life in prison. He had burglarized a home, and he'd left in the backyard, and he'd stolen a loaded shotgun from the homeowner. The homeowner came home and confronted him on the side of the yard and had a pistol himself. And I asked the young man that I was defending, didn't you just blow him away at that point in time? And he said, hey, man, I'm just a thief. I didn't want to ride an old Sparky. That told me that he was deterred by the death penalty that day. And I don't think it is a deterrent for crimes of emotion or crimes of passion, but I think it is a deterrent to some, and that's why I have supported it. But you have to be sure that the person that is convicted is guilty of the crime, and you cannot turn a deaf ear to somebody just because you want to say tough and you want to maintain a reputation of Texas is somehow tougher on crime than everybody else is.
1-800-933-572 is our telephone number. We'll go next to Azel and speak to Remy. Hi, Remy.
How you doing?
Great, thank you. Sure.
I don't want to take away from the questions and debate about education and health care and all that, but growing up here in Texas, something that's always been really important to me is Texas Parks and Wildlife. And I have to ask, seems like, I remember correctly, if I understand correctly, some of the money generated from fishing license and such is supposed to go directly to Texas Parks and Wildlife. If I understand correctly, I believe Perry diverted it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like, our historical and our natural resources should be preserved and enjoyed by all, and I think it's a heritage that needs to really be respected. I wanted to get your opinion on that. I'll happily take my answer off the air.
Thanks for
resources should be preserved.
I think you're exactly right, and what I'm referring to is a habit that the state government has fallen into here recently, and I think it's amounted to almost $1 billion here, of fees that are collected for a specific purpose that are then not appropriated and are kept in and wound up going to other things. That's not right. That's breaking faith with people. You either need to lower the price of the fee or be honest with people. They're not going to spend it on what you say you are. And you're absolutely right from the standpoint of parks and wildlife. We have to preserve our natural resources, and our natural resources are some of the most beautiful in this country. And being able to hunt and fish in Texas is I think, a sacred right and one that Texans should be able to enjoy, and they need to be able to get the benefit of paying the license fee that they do in the management of game and fish resources.
Let's go next on the line to Harold in Grand Prairie. Hi, Harold.
Hi, guys. I'm a fourth-generation Texan, and we grew up in Texas saying, thank God for Mississippi, 49th out of 50th. Today, we say thank God for Guam, Puerto Rico, American Samoa, and the American Virgin Islands, because Texas is 50th. We are ahead of the territories, guys. And this 39% Aggie Chile down there has, like Forrest Gump would say, Texas has its buttocks in a sling right now. And I just want to ask Mr. Schieffer, sir, what are you going to do? Texans don't want to hear that we're 50th out of 50th. It's time for Texas to get back on track on these so many issues that this state is behind on. Let us know what you're going to do, sir.
Well, I'm running for governor because the Census Bureau came out the other day and said Texas was 51st in education, 51st in public health care. And I didn't make a mistake, because they included the District of Columbia. We're 51st in unemployment benefits. We're number one in the number of people without a high school education in Texas. These are stunning statistics. We're 49th in teacher pay, 46th in SAT scores. Governor Perry has been involved in leading us in a race to the bottom when we should be in a race to the top. There's no reason that Texas can't lead the union and can't lead the world. We have the resources, we have the ability, we have the people. And I think we have the proud legacy of believing in Texas and believing that we can do things. And I think the way you get this ship turned around is to have new leadership.
Should we have term limits for the governor of Texas?
Term limits are, I think, are what elections are all about. But you have a situation here, and Governor Perry is asking for 14 years. That's longer than Franklin Roosevelt asked, served as president. And not only does he ask for that 14 years, but it's 14 years in which it is a deteriorating Texas that he's leading. And that's just too much for anybody.
Talk for as you travel around the state about the most surprising thing that you're hearing from voters, something that you had considered before you started your run.
I think people think across the board that state government is not working. It doesn't matter whether it is the Texas Department of Transportation, or whether it's schools, whether it's higher education. They just know that they've been flim-flammed. And they know that political rhetoric has been the topic of conversation in Austin and not substantive policy. And I think they're ready for a change. And I sense that. I make basically the same speech whether I'm in a high-income neighborhood or a low-income neighborhood, and I get the same results. People want us to do better, and they recognize that it is not working and that we need a leader to change that. What leaders do is create a culture around them, and I discovered that when I was in the private sector. If the guy at the top or the woman at the top believes in quality, believes in following the rules, then the institution does that. If the person at the top believes in cutting corners or will accept something less than quality, something less than substance, the institution will. And that's why I'm running for governor, and that's why I'm trying to change this whole atmosphere that exists in state government today.
Do you have reason, whether you are successful here or not, to be optimistic about the future of Texas?
I'm always optimistic. You couldn't have been in Texas at the very beginning and been an optimist. And I think we have used that optimism to our advantage over the years. And I still have that optimism. And the optimism I have about Texas is when you go to Texans and say, this is not working, and you offer a thoughtful, serious approach, I think they're going to respond to that. If I wasn't an optimist, I wouldn't run. But because I'm an optimist, we have a bright future and that we can turn this thing around.
Is Texas act becoming a purple state?
I think Texas is. I think that there is a chance to elect a Democrat this time, and because of this very thing that I've talked about, that people realize is not working. And I think most Texans are not ideological. I think they're very practical. I want practical solutions in government, and I think they're willing to consider a Democrat to offer those solutions.
Tom Schieffer is former U.S. ambassador to Australia and Japan and is running for governor as a Democrat in the primary that will take place next March. It's been a great pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is a production of KERA and is made possible by KERA listeners and supporters. The Think team includes assistant producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilufer Abdallah. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.